Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, real special treat. We've got Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times joining us today. And Mark, the Rays won for only the fourth time since the All-Star break, beating the Jays 3-2 on Wednesday. We got a lot to talk about. It's been a while since I've had a chance to catch up with you, certainly since the All-Star break, at least. And listen, this team is being sort of cobbled together, I guess, because of all the injuries. There were some trades we can talk about, but in general, not the start they wanted coming out of the All-Star break.
No, and you know, really leading up to yesterday's trade deadline, Rick, I would imagine that factored into some of the decisions they made to not maybe be as aggressive as we thought, or, you know, some people expected them to be as far as adding, because I think, you know, if anything, their slow start coming out of the break, you know, eliminated any hope, as narrow as it was, of running down the Yankees and being a player for the East title. And if anything showed them, they're going to be in a battle to be one of the three wild cards. And only the, you know, the first team under this new format is the only one that plays at home. That first round is a best of three all at one site. The third best division champ and the best wild card get to host it. So if you're the second or third wild card, while yes, it's better than the one game coin flip that it used to be, it's a three game series all on the road. So point being, they kind of cemented the fact that that's what they're playing for. Try to be the first of the three wild cards, maybe reality being lucky enough to hang on to be the second or third. So none of that, the slow start definitely did not further any reason to be aggressive coming out of the break is the point that I think
right. They
took out of their slow start. And they played at Kansas City, a team that obviously they should have beaten up upon. They were 6-1 going into the break. You figured they'd come rolling out of the break. They go 1-2 there. Then they go to Baltimore, playing a Baltimore team playing better, but not as good as they had been for a while. And then they go 1-3 there. And then they come home and they go 1-2 against Cleveland. So yeah, a really rough start. Now 1-1 against Toronto. So, you know, the fact for them to say, oh, at least they didn't lose a series here coming out of the break, is not the place you want to be.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the constant, obviously, Mark, has just been, you know, the lack of offense. I mean, you wrote in the Tampa Bay Times that, you know, they have now failed to record more than six hits for the fourth time in the last six games and failed to top three runs for the ninth time in 11. I mean, three runs for the ninth time in 11. There's your season right there. The injuries are the biggest part of the Rays season. There's no question about that, particularly to a lineup that's been, you know, decimated, you know, with about five starters, you know, that they had counted on. But they've, you know, they've done, I don't know what else they could do. You know, you're obviously, you know, not going to necessarily be able to trade for Juan Soto or something like that. But I mean, at the end of the day, this Rays team has pitched really well, given, you know, where they're, I'm still amazed at what their record is. I'll be quite honest with you, given the lack of offense, but it has been a lack of offense that has prevented them from winning these games.
Yeah, no doubt. And the two moves they did make at the deadline certainly, you know, in different ways addressed that. David Peralta giving them a veteran hitter, a little bit of a been there, done that kind of guy. And I think they felt like they needed that in that clubhouse. Manuel Margot is kind of that guy in a quiet way, but he's at least another three and a half weeks out or so before coming back. And they've had a lot of young guys. So I think they wanted someone who could lengthen the lineup and also provide a little bit of an example. And then they found out Jose Siri would be available and saw him as a big piece. I mean, this may be the changing of the guard, Rick. And Kiermaier underwent hip surgery. And at the end of his guaranteed term with the Rays, at guaranteed contract, maybe he comes back on a lesser deal. They're certainly not going to pay him $13 million and pick up his option. But Jose Siri may be the center fielder of the future for the Tampa Bay Rays. So they made a couple moves. I mean, Jose Siri, you know, also hitting about 170. So they get rid of Brett Phillips. They bring in Jose Siri. The net gain is only a few batting points, but, you know, they see him as a guy with a runway to play. They think is going to really turn into something. So they're trying to make moves. But I think that the number one thing that I took out of a couple of conversations with Eric Neander, one on the phone, one in person last night, and then one again today, is that, you know, they feel, right or wrong, and we'll know soon enough, because that's the beauty of being in this business, is we get to judge what they do. It's right there in front of us at 7 o'clock most nights. But right or wrong, they feel, Rick, pretty confident that when they get Wander Franco, Harold Ramirez, and Manuel Margot back, in addition to the guys they picked up, Jose Siri and David Peralta, that they're going to have a really dynamic offense. I mean, they're not going to get Kiermaier back. They're not going to get Zunino back. But they feel with those other guys, and certainly a Wander Franco who's motivated, who's had a very much a miserably lost sophomore season, he could really be an impact player for them. So I think their point is they didn't want to go too far in adding offense when they feel like they're going to still have a pretty good team when they're all healthy, which should be around the end of August. Now, pitching-wise, as you said, they've been pitching pretty well. I thought they would have added a pitcher, created some more depth, had a little bit more experience down there in that bullpen. They don't have a ton of that. And arguably, you know, without their most important high-leverage reliever in Kittredge, the guy they thought maybe was going to take his place, Fireyes, in no sense when he's going to be back, if he's going to be back. And Fairbanks just came back. So really kind of without three of their top high-leverage guys. But the bullpen, Jason Adam, has been a tremendous help, unheralded, unknown. They didn't know what they were getting. They signed him because he had an option. They just wanted to make sure they had somebody they could send down at some point this year, and he's been their best pitcher out of the bullpen. So they've helped it together. So the starting rotation, you know, it's been good, Rick, but it's going to be interesting because there's been a lot of talk. Kevin Cash has been very transparent about their concerns over workload and inning limits. They've got several guys approaching already. Here we are in early August, getting close to their career highs. Shane McClanahan is one, certainly. Jeffrey Springs, Drew Rasmussen. These are guys, those two, you know, moved into the rotation from past jobs as relievers. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how they manage that. I think you're going to see them go with a bullpen day on the last day in Detroit, and then I think you're going to see them take advantage of a couple of days off to try to give these guys basically an extra, you know, it's almost like skipping a turn, except to do it for all of them with an extra couple of days here and there. So managing that as they go forward, I mean, Patino at some point could come back up and join as a sixth guy or something like that, but there's just so many things to juggle. They've got guys coming back from injuries, including a couple pitchers, Nick Anderson, JT Chargois, maybe I remember this name from the past, Rick. Yanni Chirinos is on the
trail. Yeah.
As is Brendan McKay. So who knows? We'll see those guys pitching in game 162 clinch something. You never know how baseball works. But so they got guys coming back on both sides of the ball. They feel like they made a couple additions. I'm surprised they didn't add a reliever, but they feel like they've got enough depth in the bullpen at this point. And they're confident. Pete Bendix, the GM, said this. I talked to him during the All-Star break, and he said with all they've been through, and I agree. I agree with what you said, too. I cover this team every day, and as bad as they've been for long stretches, it amazes me to look up and see they're still in the middle of the wild card race.
Yeah, I mean, they're 58 and – well, what are they now? Well, they're about six games over 500, yeah.
And just to be there, given all they've gone through, is amazing. But what Pete Bendix was saying was they feel like if they can get to October and they get everybody back, they're expecting to get back, and nobody else gets hurt. Yeah. But they're going to be a hell of a team to deal with in October. And, you know, I kind of see his point, especially, you know, who else is lurking out there, Rick? The big guy with the man bun, Tyler Glass now. He is throwing bullpens. I'm hearing he's looking really, really good. They all keep telling us he's looking really good. Nobody wants to get expectations up or hopes up. He hasn't thrown to a hitter yet, but think of that weapon. Even if he comes back and he's only a two or three inning guy, what he could do, especially in a short series.
But we've seen the videos of him, and it seems like he's cutting it loose pretty good. I mean, it doesn't look like there's a whole lot of restrictions on his velocity. The one thing I would worry about, and you mentioned the workload, you know, Shane McClanahan was the only All-Star, and of course he started the game and gave up the two runs, but the American League still managed to win. And then I think whether he had an extra length of days between that and starting again. His last outing, and I mean, Cleveland moves the baseball, right? And they got some bleeders and some things that fell in on him. But I think you may have reported, or I might have heard or read, that his velocity was down a little bit. I mean, McClanahan is, for all intents and purposes, I mean, that is the most elite left-hander in baseball right now. So there, of all those pitchers you mentioned, they got to be most concerned that he is now exceeding any sort of workload that he's had in the past, right?
Exactly. And you know, the other thing we lose track of, and we all do, is that this is his first full year in the big leagues. You know, the weird debut in 2020 where he spent, you know, there was no minor league season, so he spent the whole summer in Port Charlotte. Then he got called up and went on the postseason roster. last year, you know, it's easy to forget this, but he didn't make the opening day roster. He didn't get called up till April 29th or April 30th. So they kept him down the first month of last year. And there was some fatigue toward the end of last year. So I think their concerns, even though he's, you know, his point, I asked him the other day, he goes, I think everyone's more worried about my innings than I am. But yeah, these guys know what they're doing. And yeah, they've had a lot of injuries, but that doesn't take away from their expertise, from their care, from their wisdom, from their concern to keep these guys healthy. They know it's their lifeline. Like, if you're the manager, you're the pitching coach, at some point you're judged on results, right? So you want your best pitchers out there winning games too. You want to keep your job. So, I mean, they all are in this for the right reason. But yeah, Shane McClanahan at some point, you know, he can't go from 125, 130 innings last year to 210 innings this year. They're just not going to do that. So they're going to have to pick their spots, and there's going to be a couple of five-inning outings where he's pitching well. And if they lose a game late, you know, and because the bullpen doesn't do the job, they're going to look at the way Cash said the other night in Baltimore, which is, yeah, we had a lot of confidence in Shane, but we have a lot of confidence in the guys coming in behind him.
Yeah, and I see as they get some of these guys back, whether it's Fire Rising or some of the ones that we just mentioned, I see some more bullpen days and some more openers. And, you know, on Wednesday, I mean, Ryan Yarbrough, you know, he came in and he pitched very well. He's done pretty good the last couple times out. So maybe he can give him some length as well. Because they pitched really, really well. Go back to, you know, the deals they did make. Surrey, you know, and you mentioned his, you know, his batting average isn't what it is, but a couple of things. One, they're in control of him for a number of years here, I think 4 or 5 years. And then secondly, he showed right away what kind of outfielder he is. I mean, this is a plus center fielder, no doubt about that. And I can't, you know, who knows what happens next year, but just the thought that Kevin Kiermaier, I mean, you've covered this team for a long time. And if, when you do the roll call of great Rays players, you don't get down too far before you mention KK, right?
Not at all. Not at all. And that's why I say we may be witnessing a changing of the guard right before our eyes here.
Yeah.
And look, you've been around Kevin Cash enough, Rick, that he is, as you know, as far from hyperbole as one can be.
Right.
As far as you know, lavishing praise and you know, getting into best this, best that.
Yeah.
And he said unprompted the other day that, you know, there's very few players in his mind who you would compare to Kevin Kiermaier, and that from what they've seen of Jose Siri, the videos, the scouting reports, and obviously certainly his first game with them, that they feel like he is in that category. And the closing speed he showed on that ball Tuesday night, the one he caught in right center, I think he ran 74 feet. He's in the 100th percentile on the StatCast sprint speed ratio and percentile ratios and things like that. And you could see why. And then he just about made that catch on the second ball, the one in the ninth inning, where he came a long way in. And
yeah,
and this is a guy who had never really gotten familiar with the roof before or the turf before. So he's only going to get more comfortable. And you know, even today playing the day game was different for he and Peralta, you know, than it was playing the night game.
Yeah, no doubt. And in catching, I mean, you know, Zunino gave them a bunch of power last year. Of course, he had the injury that knocked him out. He's sort of in a similar situation with respect to whether he were to come back next year or not. But I think defensively, and they've tried to remedy that as best they could with now Betancourt, but they've really missed the defense almost as much as they missed the lack of power.
Yeah, and I think probably if we had some truth serum questions with some of the Rays people, they would not have expected 33 home runs again from Zunino. They probably realized that was an arc, and maybe 20-25 would have been good. And
yeah,
trade that off for getting the batting average on the other side of 200 a little bit more. But yeah, the work he does behind the plate, the pitch calling, the leadership he provides, the ability to keep pitchers calm down, and just the savvy he has in running a game. I think all those things, and some of those are obviously intangibles, but those are all things that they knew they were going to miss without him. And you know, Frankie Mejia, I think he's done a pretty good job. I mean, he hadn't been throwing real well, and then he started throwing very well.
Better,
and
he ended up
hurting his shoulder after that incredible throw, the one game in Baltimore. But he's kind of grown into it a little bit. He's never really had the chance to play every day, and he was more or less getting that. I mean, they want to keep Bethencourt in there a little bit, and he's not the smoothest guy behind the plate, and the bat hasn't shown up, but they think he's a better hitter than he's been. So they're going to mix it up a little bit, but if they get Mejia back on Friday, which is what they're talking about, you know, not trading for a catcher maybe doesn't look as bad. Again, I'm still surprised they couldn't go find somebody else's veteran number two or number three. You know, Reese McGuire got traded. There's a couple other guys that have just been around that, you know, we've seen veteran type backups that you would have thought maybe they would have picked one up, but they really wanted to keep the lane open for the guys they have.
Well, and you know, these moves, including the one with Siri, of course, had some corresponding moves, none more popular or unpopular maybe among Rays fans than Brett Phillips being TFA'd. Yeah. Eventually gets traded to the Baltimore Orioles. Phillips had one of the greatest moments in Rays history. There's no doubt about it. That's one of the craziest wins that in baseball history, probably in a World Series game. And, of course, you know, he'll forever be airplaning his way through the outfield and saying baseball is fun. But just the life that he brought. Listen, it, you know this as well as anyone, Mark. It's you know, it's not show friends, it's show business, right? And
right.
But the fact that he was a Seminole High School kid who grew up, you know, going to Rays games and wearing their tank tops, as it turns out, was not only a great story, but he again will have that place, you know, in Rays lore, maybe more so than Dan Johnson, even, who had some really big hits but wasn't beloved the way Brett Phillips was. But you lose something out of the clubhouse. And then again, you know, it's about production. It's a bottom line business. And he understands that as well as anybody. But that was a loss in its own way, right?
In a number of ways. I mean, I think it certainly, it was a loss in connection with the fan base. I mean, yeah. You know, a lot of social media comments, and you know, it's easy for people to say, I'll never go to a game again because they traded Brett Phillips, and then they'll be at a game in a week or
right,
two. But,
right.
But I do think there was a connection with the fan base. He went out of his way. He was far and above what any other player I've ever seen do, signing autographs before every home game, doing a lot of stuff in the community during the offseason. Even, you know, the giveaway day the other day, which he was just beyond thrilled. They did a giveaway in his honor with the basketball jersey. And then, you know, agreeing to sign autographs for an hour after the game for fans. He said, I asked him how it went. He said he thinks he didn't sign anything but jersey. Everybody just wanted the jersey signed. Just wanted his name on the jersey. He had already pre-signed some pictures for people who got shut out. And he said people didn't even want the picture. They just wanted him to sign the jersey. So I think, you know, the fan connection is one thing. And, yes, there is something to be said for the energy in the clubhouse, and you know, we see him take, you know, the leadership in the dugout, first guy on the top step, first guy to celebrate anybody's accomplishment, taking the helmet off people who hit home runs. I mean, we've seen him do all those things, and there is something to be said for all that. But, you know, it's kind of hard because this is the pros. It's not like,
yeah,
you know, in high school or college where you want that and you know, yeah, you need that, and it's still good in the pros and it has its benefit, but you know, you don't get paid to be a mascot and you don't get paid to be a cheerleader. You get paid to be a player. And ultimately his numbers just weren't getting any better. And I think there was some, you know, just the lack of progress. And I think he felt it too. I mean, he was trying all kinds of different things. He was constantly tweaking, adjusting, yeah, his stance, trying to figure it out. He still has some value as a great defensive player. He still has some value as a really good pinch runner. But it just wasn't going to, I don't think it was going to work. I don't think they could afford to carry him given the other guys that they had to carry too. If everybody else was healthy, you could carry a Brett Phillips. I mean, I when we, you know, when he got let go the other day and talking to his agent and some other people, you know, it became clear the Yankees were one of the teams interested in him. And I mentioned it, and my wife actually said, why would the Yankees want him? You know, I said, no, that's exactly why. They've got, mm-hmm, such a great offense.
Yeah.
They can carry a guy who hits 140 or 150, mm-hmm, but plays great defense and is a pinch runner. I mean, Baltimore's not a bad fit. I mean, I think for Brett's sake, he might get to play more in Baltimore, but you know, probably if he wanted to be playing till the end of October, going to the Yankees might have been the best opportunity. He didn't get that, unfortunately, for him. But so I kind of see it both ways. I get it. And, you know, should there be some sentiment for what he did? And you know, the moment with the young girl, Chloe, patient, that was, tremendous. You know, the highlight moment of this season. A number of other things he's done where he's reached out to people. You're always willing to catch the first pitch, always willing to say hello when they do the Tuesday Child. The Tuesday Child is usually from – you know, make a wish or something like that. Obviously a tough situation. He's always out there with those kids. So he does all these things. I mean, the t-shirt business that started as a kind of a novelty, that's become a big thing. The baseball is fun. And if you still want one, I noticed baseballsfun35.com is still in business. They made a point of sending out an email to people saying, hey, we're still here. We're still going to do this. We're going to try to do some in Orioles colors, you know, give us the time to get caught up here. But so there's a lot of wonderful things Brett Phillips did. Unfortunately, he just didn't play well enough to stay on the active roster.
Of course, we're visiting with Mark Tompkin of the Tampa Bay Times, who covers the Rays. We'll resume that conversation. But first, I want you folks to remember that you can do something about your out-of-control electric bills, and they are out of control because your AC is running all the time right now, and it needs to. Call our friends at May Electric Solar. It's a family-owned business. They've been installing solar electric systems for 12 years. Now, you know, there's this field has got a lot of fly-by-night companies, and May Electric Solar is committed to you for the long term. They guarantee their workmanship with a 30-year labor and service warranty. Plus, with every installation, you get $750 worth of surge protection for all your appliances. That right there, that's the May difference. So if you visit their Hudson showroom, May Electric displays all their products. They conduct on-site testing. You see exactly what they're going to install. And plus, they don't use subcontractors at all. So you know exactly who is doing the job. So start saving today. Call the solar energy experts, May Electric Solar, at 727-819-2862 to schedule a free estimate. You can lower your electric bill all year long, preserve your quality of life, and preserve your appliances as well. That's May Electric Solar at 727-819-2862. This doesn't count for anything because no one cares, but you know, I am about twice or three times a year in a clubhouse in the Rays, you know, trying to hold things together while you're doing your Sunday stuff or coming off a road. And the one thing about Brett Phillips, if somebody is in that clubhouse that he doesn't know or that is new there, and he did this to me, walks right up, introduces himself to you.
Right.
And it's the weird, you know, and believe me, I've been covering professional sports, you know, as long as you have, Mark, and I don't care what sport you're talking about. That doesn't happen very often. And it's almost disarming, you know, in a way, but that's exactly who he is. You know,
you're saying if I go over to help you out one day, Tom Brady's not going to come up and introduce himself to me. Well, dang it.
You're not going to find Tom Brady, pal. he's led by a into the microphone and out of the microphone very quickly. And I still hold dear that I'm the only one that's interviewed him locally, in a one-on-one situation in the last two and a half, going on three years. So yeah, it's a little bit different, but, and listen, I'm not ripping on Tom because quite frankly, I have been in his company. And the one thing about Tom is, for a megastar is that he's very present when he is sitting across from you or in the case at the Hall of Fame, shaking my wife's hand 18 times, you know, he will, look you in the eye. You never see him with a cell phone. You never see him hurried. And so for a superstar of that magnitude, he actually is, you know, his parents have done a great job with him and all of that. But yeah, you're not gonna have probably anybody, I wouldn't think, in the Buccaneers locker room, which should be open again this year, just walk up to an unknown reporter and introduce themselves every time somebody new is in there. That's a rare thing in professional sports, and it was something that you know, just people don't see and really probably don't care about, but it meant something. And says something about his character. This feels like the New York Yankees, not only are they running away with the American League East. Mark, the big fear has always been, what if these guys stay healthy for a whole season? And for the most part, they've done just that. And, of course, what Aaron Judge is doing is insane. Now they add Frankie Montas, who I watched him pitch one game of the two or three games I've done this year. He was lights out. I mean, the guy's about 6'8 and 260. That's just the rich get richer, right?
Yeah. Look, if he stays healthy, he's obviously a great addition to them at a time when some of their other starters are faltering a little bit. I mean, Taillon has been bad lately.
Yeah.
They ended up trading Jordan Montgomery. Obviously he wasn't very good. And, you know, instead of Brett Phillips, they got a National League Gold Glove winner in Harrison Bader. So, you know, it's not like, don't feel bad for the Yankees that they missed out on Brett Phillips. They had a different plan of mind, but
yeah.
So, you know, Nestor Cortez, I mean, he's been tricking him, and he's been tricking him for 4 months. Can he continue to keep tricking him?
True.
You know, we'll see. But
that's true.
You know, you start with Gerrit Cole, and now you add Frankie Montas. And, you know, if you have Cortez and maybe you get Taillon figured out, they've got a couple other options to drop in there. But, you know, that bullpen is still pretty good despite the injuries they've had in the back end there. And the lineup's obviously deep and thick and relentless. And, you know, it doesn't hurt that, you know, getting rid of Rizzo and getting Benintendi, I mean, getting, not Rizzo, I'm sorry, Gallo. And
Gallo, yeah.
Benintendi was obviously a plus move, too. So, yeah, the Yankees have positioned themselves well. In fact, somebody made a point today on MLB Radio saying that the reason you trade Montgomery is you're not worried about having 5 and 6 starters anymore. You're thinking about the postseason. You need to have your best three or four starters and your best team behind them. And if having a Gold Glove center fielder to go in late in games is worth it, instead of having a 5th or 6th starter, that was why they made that deal.
Yeah, you make the moves to the bullpen or elsewhere, and then you save runs late in the game.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'll get you out on this, Mark. You've done baseball for a long time, not as long as Vin Scully was calling baseball from the time he was 25 with the Brooklyn Dodgers. He passed away just the other night, and I don't know how much interaction you've certainly, you know, come into his circle many, many times, I'm sure. What's your thoughts about and what people are saying about him, what he meant to the game, and just if you've had any personal interactions with him?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Rick, I don't think you could say enough about what Vin Scully has meant to the game of baseball, and just, you know, watching and listening over the last 24 hours to the tributes and who they're coming from, and it makes it very clear that, you know, how many people he touched, and to so many people, he is the game, that he is the the voice, he is the soundtrack of baseball to many people. I mean, and personal interaction, I met him, I know a couple times. I actually was able to dig out a picture today when the Rays were at the Dodgers in 2016. Dave Wills and Andy Fried had set something up to meet him, and I kind of tagged along.
Oh, cool.
And when they were done, I got a moment or two with him, took a photo with him, which I have and certainly treasure, and you know, was looking at that this morning. But you talk about the class and the gesture and the kindness and all the things you hear people say about him. Here I am, you know, and he was kind of busy because he had done some with Dave and Andy. He had a few other things to do. He tries to have a little area where he eats before the game where they try to keep everyone else away, like a little private room, not in the regular media dining room. And I kind of waited, and, you know, they got his guy finally remembered. Oh, yeah. And they, like, we went into this, like, little closet, like a book closet where we could take a picture without attracting other people. And anyway, introduced myself, and he said, "I read your stuff." And I'm like, "Yeah, right, sure." That's super nice. And he goes, "I mentioned you on the air yesterday. You had a great point about the trade and what the Rays are going to do." And I swear, I was like, "Oh my God, Vin Scully mentioned my name on the air." And I was like,
"That's amazing."
Rays radio, like, can you guys,
how do I get this?
We couldn't track it down. I was frustrated at the time, and you know, that's fine, just the fact that he said it. But that's my little, like, wow, Vin Scully, it's out there somewhere that Vin Scully said Mark Chopkin Tampa Bay Times on the air, and that was like the coolest thing just to hear. And the fact that he made enough to tell me, he didn't even have to tell me what I mean,
right?
Right, he said 50 people's names on the air that day, but just that in meeting me, taking this picture in a closet after he'd already been running around right before the game, and he shared that, and that just to me was like my own little personal, for, you know, means nothing to anyone else except me and my mom, whatever, but, you know, my anecdote of Vin Scully, and just, no, I mean, here's the other thing. Find me someone who says something bad about Vin Scully. He'll be the first person. Like, who
that's is, right. That's no right.
Usually everyone. I mean, as great as Tom Brady is, and certainly the GOAT in his field, as Vin Scully is the GOAT in his field. But there's been a few people that had a few things to say about Tom Brady. I don't know anyone who says anything bad about Vin Scully.
Yeah, that's really a good way of putting it. And, you know, just one of the giants of the game and a giant gentleman as well. Yeah, and you know, it's amazing because his career was so long, and people forget he did football. I mean, he called the catch with Dwight Clark, you know, and I still get goosebumps with that. Late in his life, I got to meet Dwight Clark and actually befriend him a little bit. And you know, Vin did a lot of sports, and was, of course, the Kirk Gibson home run, and, you know, some of the major moments. But his real talent was knowing when to shut up. And absolutely, there's that story about, absolutely, you know, Henry Aaron's 715th home run, where after he hit it and he called it, he literally turned around and turned his back to the action, to home plate, to resist saying anything else for a number of minutes. It was just
a remarkable story, and such a telling story of here's the other thing, Rick. He cared about the game. He didn't care about Vin Scully.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he said, you know, of course, his signing off was, I needed you more than you needed me, which is not true, but we're certainly going to miss him, and I appreciate your words. That picture would would be it for me. I think that's just tremendous. And the fact that he mentioned you on the air is great. We mention you on the air often. You are off to Detroit. Good luck with your trip. I know it's one of those 4 a.m. wake-up calls, 20-hour days. Few of us have to endure that, but you certainly do it often. And we'll see how the Rays are able. They need to win a series. They need to start by winning a series. They split the 2 games with Toronto. We'll see if they can turn themselves around a little bit here and get into October. And then anything can happen, as you know. So thanks, Mark. And have a safe trip. And we'll talk to you when you get back, man.
All right. Sounds good, Rick.
All right. Just before we get out of here, the Bucks practice indoors. Not a surprise because it's been like walking on the sun out there. And we mentioned yesterday in the podcast how, you know, Todd Bowles got on his team for not mentally pushing through some of that. It was also Tom Brady's birthday. Happy 45th to the GOAT. I don't know if you saw, Derek, the GOAT cake that Leonard Fournette produced or had had bought actually for him. It was kind of creepy. It was so realistic. It looked like a goat's head, like a real goat's head. It was.
Yeah, I was going to say it. I like the whole concept of goat, but when you put it out like that, the goat's head, I don't know. Usually, you know, you see the whole goat and it's fine. But just the goat head staring at you.
Add a little bit.
Next time, put a little less thought into it.
Yeah, right. But that was interesting. And of course, Tom Brady will never eat that cake because it has sugar in it. So that's the way that goes. But I'm sure his teammates enjoyed it. So Brady got the whole day off. Like, you know, some guys just had a veteran day where they didn't have to practice, but they were still at practice. I didn't see Tom at all. So I, you know, don't keep track of him that way, but he could have been.
He was probably trying to avoid you to begin with, but you know.
Well, listen, I don't think he was going to hold any more press conferences after. You know, the league revealed that the Miami Dolphins had tampered with him twice in 2019 with the Patriots, and then is no later than December of last year when he was trying to defend his Super Bowl title. So there's that. At some point, yes, he will be asked about it. I asked Todd Bowles about it. Trust me, he didn't want to go there. It was almost as if it was like, what, tampering? What's that? What is there a story? People just try to write stuff. No, it was really tampering, and it really happened while your quarterback was trying to win a championship. But the Bucks were awfully glad to be inside, indoors. That's what mattered to them, and we were too. I'm not going to lie. So they're off today. They'll return on Friday, and then, of course, through the weekend. And then next week, of course, the Miami Dolphins come to town for some dual workouts or joint workouts on Wednesday and Thursday, and then they'll take a little day off on Friday, or at least – do some walkthroughs and things like that separately, and then play on Saturday, the first preseason game, which brings me to this. Todd Bowles said yesterday that don't expect to see Tom Brady in the first game, which is the only preseason game at Raymond James Stadium. You know, there's 3 of these things. They play against the Miami Dolphins, at Raymond James, then at Tennessee after joint workouts there, and they finish up at Indianapolis. Those are your 3 preseason games. Used to be 4. There's now a week in between the final preseason game and the start of the regular season. Brady will, of course, be practicing and participating a lot, as will all the starters, in those joint practices. The reason being, you can control it. It's a controlled scrimmage. They're not going to probably tackle to the ground. They're going to obviously not hit the quarterbacks. So it's a much safer way to get work, and you get really good work against another football team without having to expose them. And then they'll use the preseason game for guys like Kyle Trask and to some degree Blaine Gabbert, but mostly Trask. I think we'll get to play a lot of football in August. But what that means is, if you're a Bucks fan, the first time you're going to see Tom Brady at Raymond James Stadium is week 3 of the regular season.
Yikes.
We're still several weeks them playing the Dallas Cowboys September 11th, and then you figure it's going to be 2 weeks after that. So it's quite a long time before Tom Brady is in front of you if you live in Tampa.
I tell you what, I'm just a little heads up about tomorrow's show. There might be a question or two about Tom Brady and the fans and what they think of him. So
very interesting.
Yeah, this ain't done.
Looking forward to it. You can still get questions in any time if you want to. You can do that by going on Twitter, submitting them to us at SportsDayTV. You can reach me on Twitter at NFL Stroud, or me. My email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. My thanks to Mark Tompkin again. For Derek Sharp, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.